Good afternoon. Welcome back to Passionate Internet Voices Talk Radio, Inc., a League of Nations, among other internet radio talk stations, Voices of the People, United We Roar. Today is January 25th, 2008, and now from PIVTR's very own Dr. Barbara Becker-Holstein and Martha Trowbridge in Happiness for Women Only. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Hi, everybody. I'm Dr. Barbara Becker-Holstein, and the other lovely voice is Martha.
Oh, yes, Martha Trowbridge. Hi, everybody.
Martha Trowbridge. I wanted to reach you, Martha, so we could get some sort of song and dance routine like, hi, I'm Barbara, and hi, I'm Martha.
Well, I have my tap shoes on.
Oh, good, good. I thought it would be so cute, you up in Vermont, freezing cold, me sitting here in a little bit of a sweltering days in the office. Somebody put the heat a little too high, but it's you know, I thought we should develop our own opener, and we will. We'll work on it.
Okay.
Anyway, today's show I've titled Happiness is Power. And I thought about power as happiness, but that's not always the case. But indeed, when we have found our legitimate sources of power, there is happiness. We're going to discuss some of that. And in order to do that, we really have to talk about girls and growing up rather than just starting with adult women. And this is going to be a lot of fun. What I'd like to do first is mention that how we feel around power is a very complicated topic. We could take a semester course in it as women. And we have so many different factors, whether how our families have viewed power, how they view power for a girl versus a boy. Biggie, biggie, biggie. That's part of my original research in The Enchanted Self, was asking how girls were treated in the home rather than boys when I did my case studies. And it seems to be that there were much larger dishes of power for boys going out than girls very often.
Well, Barbara, do you find that to be true today?
Yes. Interestingly enough, it's more coded and disguised. It's not so much that the boy goes to college and the girl doesn't, which was the case in many of the women I interviewed who are quite a bit older. But even with my young clients, they can be 20, 22, 24, they'll talk about really feeling powerless, that they're sort of just in nowhere's land waiting for some sort of future to happen. Maybe they have a job, but they don't really know how to effectuate it into the future to make a career. They're supposed to get married. You know, they have a lot of the same messages. I'm not saying they're bad messages, but they're in there. And they'll talk about a mother who is unable to really facilitate her life, has emotional problems, sits around a lot, maybe yells at her, you know, yells all the time. And these are blows that take the gal down, and then she loses a lot of her power. So it's just as prevalent. It's just the way it's, you know, certain things are now off limits. Most families will not just say to children, only the boy can go to college.
Well, I think also, Barbara, it's very different in the public school system and private school system today than it was in the 40s, 50s, and 60s, where there's less gender bias than there was years ago.
Yes,
definitely. I mean, I think it could still be going on in terms of this discrimination against females, but I do think the climate is a lot better today. Also, we have so many role models of women who went forward and did wonderful things with their lives, like my guest last week, or
yeah,
I guess it's 2 weeks ago, Elise Cherry, when we did that show on women in power. So I agree it's still there, and I'm wondering, listening to you, are these messages mainly from the mother or the father or
both?
They're
definitely from both.
From both.
There's no way of knowing. And maybe to sum up what we're saying, what I'm really saying is the dysfunction in the home that incorporates role identity impressions in people's heads and how they react to different people with different styles of personality is just as prevalent as 100 or 1,000 years ago. That's a lot. That's just human nature.
Mm-hmm.
What has changed, you're right, Martha, is the outer forces work better for us. You know, there's scholarships and there are role models and there's being picked to go to the government summer camp to learn how governments are run. And, you know, just as many boys as girls and girls as boys go off to these state programs and so on. So a lot of things have shifted.
And the barriers are far less than when you and I were entering the world, I think.
Definitely. But still, it's a big subject. And it is one of the reasons, not the only reason, but one reason why I originally wrote The Truth, I'm 10, I'm Smart, and I Know Everything, because I wanted women to be able to reassess their uses of their courage and their power and maybe really harness their own energies again and really make changes, whether you're 40, 50, 60, 30, really get in touch with what you're good at and what you feel powerful about.
And to be better mothers to their daughters, too, in terms of facilitating the empowerment of their daughters.
Absolutely, because, again, the dysfunction in the home that I'm talking about goes from generation to generation. So the more someone corrects how they feel, how they handle their daughters, you know, that they're not jealous or intimidated, and they really love that the daughter has a strong feeling of her own power, the more that helps the next generation.
Mm-hmm. And that is a huge issue, Barbara. I think that whole conflict or this sense that sometimes a parent feels less than because a daughter or a son is achieving great things at school at an early age, and instead of amplifying that energy within them, they tend to crush it and make it a bad thing as opposed to a good thing. And that's incredibly damaging.
It's very, very, very damaging. I talk about that a lot in my first book, The Enchanted Self, A Positive Therapy, and I self-reveal some things that I think are very, I'm going to use the word, powerful, in the sense that they really shifted my whole life into academia and writing and becoming a psychologist, and it took me till my later 40s to completely understand that I had sold off a part of myself in order to feel powerful.
And you know, Barbara, would you like to read a bit from that passage you mentioned from The Enchanted Self?
Well, I think I can summarize it a little. The page is, I think, page 14 in The Enchanted Self, 14 to 16. But I think I can say it in fewer words so that we can get to so many topics, and I want you to share examples from yourself and Elise, and I want to read some things and the girl said and The Truth. So let me just read some summary statements.
Oh, sure.
In my family, the messages I was taught was that there was no power in being a woman unless you left the home and became emancipated from the house somehow. And what the house represented, which somehow was chores, boredom, housework, a husband who might put you down, not having your own money, feeling depressed, around the house too much. If you became focused on a career, then you could somehow have it all. In other words, if you focused on a career, you could indeed have a husband. You didn't have to stay single. You could have a family if you wanted a family. You could have pretty clothes. You could have happiness. You know, you could travel. You could have jewelry. You could do whatever you wanted. You could go to plays, have friends, and a clean house, because it would be clean by a cleaning lady. But if you stayed home, there was only depression and stagnation to look forward to. So given these messages that I had absorbed, obviously I opted for power, but the power that the messages were saying. And so there was a part of me that I just cut off and crushed.
Which is?
I'm the part that actually enjoys staying home, cooking,
being a homebody.
Well, not so much staying alone in the house, but you know, having a network of women friends, feeling I had just as competent a day to maybe do some charity work or visit somebody or chat my head off with a girlfriend as to be a college professor. You know, that it's just one more facet of myself.
Mm-hmm.
So to be an accomplished woman, I had to actually cut off part of myself, and I have spent the years since my mid-40s really rebirthing that part and balancing that part with the professional woman.
Which is the source of much happiness.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Either extreme can be deadly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a balance of many facets.
Right.
So, you know, and I didn't even have parents who put me down. This was subtle stuff from family, from cousins and relatives, and my father's efforts to make sure that I always could take care of myself, and all sorts of things.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how complicated power is and how to get it as a woman. You were talked a lot about Elise Sherry. Give us a little sense of her sense of power.
Sure. Well, on the show, which is archived on January 11th, it's mm-hmm. a wonderful show. She's a tremendous inspiration to all of us. We chatted about how she and I met at age 9, going on 10, that summer of 1964 when she moved into the beach house across the road from the beach house we had. And she and I were both very bright and fun-loving and so on, but she had already at that age acquired a sense of personal agency, of the ability to do things, and she taught me so much. It was just amazing. And she told a really cute story how she decided one of the ways to have power was to earn money. So she figured out it would be fun to get a newspaper route delivering newspapers on a bicycle in the morning in our community. And she, if people listen to the show, they'll probably get a kick out of her telling how she had to badger the circulation director into letting her do it because she was a girl, and up till that point in time, no one in the history of the business of decades had ever allowed a girl to have a paper route. And she had this great line where she said, you know, she kept saying, why? And he couldn't figure out why. And finally he allowed her, he had an opening and allowed her to take the paper route, and then she made way for me to take a paper route, so we'd get up at dawn and go out on our bikes and deliver newspapers. So that was the beginning of her path, I guess, and she talked about how positive it was, how wonderful she felt to have power, to earn money, because she could take the bus places and she could buy books and do all kinds of things that she would not have been able to do. And so she told other vignettes as well, but the bottom line is that her experience with power was very positive from a very young age, and you can see with her life now she's chairperson of the board of 3 organizations, and you can see how she was able to feel not only comfortable but good about it and to have her life directed. She also was a partner at a very prestigious Boston law firm, probably what I consider the best law firm in Boston. She was made partner at a very early age. So she is an example of a girl from we were both born in the 1954, a girl at that time taking those messages, which are similar to yours, that you have power if you can make your way in the world kind of thing.
Right. There's nothing that is basically a wholesome, good message.
Right.
It's just that we don't want it to be a cut-off message of other parts of ourselves.
No, not at all. Absolutely not.
May I piggyback on you're saying by reading a little bit on pages 12 and 13 of The Truth, I'm 10, I'm Smart, and I Know Everything, which currently you can buy for 2 books for the price of 1 on my website, enchantedself.com. So that's so similar to some of the things you're saying. Here's what I do all about by myself. I catch the bus 2 blocks from my house and go downtown. I'm not afraid. My mother said to sit near the driver, and I do. I talk to him sometimes. Other times I read. When I get downtown, sometimes I do things like yesterday. I bought some beautiful lace for a new doll's dress I'm making, and I got an ice cream sundae in the 5- and 10-cent store. This time I got marshmallow sauce instead of whipped cream. It's the same price, and I thought it would be a nice change, and it was. Next, I looked at makeup. The 5- and 10-cent store has two aisles just filled with lipsticks, mascara, nail polish, and lots of things for women. I had such a good time, I never get bored. A store like the 5- and 10-cent is great, because if I get tired in one section, I can always go to another section to wander around it, and they have a bathroom, which is important. Then I waited for the bus to come home, and when it came, guess what? It was the same driver. I was so happy I sat near him again. I'm so glad I can do things by myself. I feel so grown up. I have a friend, Shannon. Her parents are rich, but she never gets to go downtown by herself. She can't believe that I do. They live on my street, but they're moving away next month to a house with 10 rooms. Her mother drives her everywhere. I feel sorry for her. The truth is, parents should let their kids do things for themselves. And that's the little vignette.
Mm. Lots of memories there.
Yeah? Did you do a lot for yourself?
Well, I did and I didn't. I mean, I had sort of a mixed bag growing up. I was there was a lot of cultural pressure in my family. But at the same time, I was a rebel and defied everybody and did what I wanted. But there was a psychological cost to that because you're bad when you rebel and, you know, you receive that kind of ostracization because you're not conforming to the family. So I had a more mixed bag. Elise's situation was different in that she admits that she sort of just tuned out all of the things around her she didn't want to listen to, and she just went into overdrive and went forward. And it's admirable she was able to do that, but I was more prone to feeling, torn in a lot of ways about my life. But I did make great strides considering for high school I went to a private school, and then I went on to Radcliffe College and went on from there and did a lot of interesting things. But there was always that pull away from it in my life, that the guilt or the whatever, that I was taking a direction other than the one perhaps my extended family would have chosen for me.
Did you have to fight to go to Radcliffe, or was that something that...
Well, that's another whole story. I'm from a very educated family. My grandparents on both sides are immigrants, but all of my aunts and uncles on both sides of the family, 10 on one and 4 on the other, 14,
wow,
they all went to college, and many of them went to Harvard, which is amazing. So it wasn't, we all, my siblings, I'm one of six, we all went to very good schools, but
uh-huh,
it's a long story. My older brother did not want me to go to Harvard because he had gone, and he wanted to be the only one in the family who went. He wanted me to go to Wellesley, which is where Elise went. So that
was
my
daughter
thing.
Went. But here you know, that's such a clear example for our listeners. Hear what you just said, Martha. You know, your brother wanted you to go to Wellesley for his own issues around self-esteem, priority
right
in the family, who knows what. Pure dysfunction.
Mm-hmm.
Because really where you should, you know, wherever you went should have been your own choice, or, you know, choosing with your parents, your guidance people, whatever, for your best interests. It's no reflection on him at all.
Right. But
so,
he didn't feel that way. He
no,
felt very upstaged.
No.
Upstaged. Also, I was the first woman to go in my extended family to go to an Ivy League school. My sisters went to Catholic colleges and, you know, that kind of thing. So I was breaking the tradition there as well.
Yeah. So, and you mentioned something very important for our listeners. When you think about yourselves and you think about your daughters, think about their style of being. If somebody is very, very sensitive, they may still heroically be determined and force the family to let them take piano lessons or whatever it is, but there's going to be a deep wound. While if somebody is like Elise and can kind of block out the family, you know, she'll just go ahead and there probably isn't as much sustained pain.
Right.
So it's very important not to inflict more pain on yourself or your loved ones, in this case we're talking about your daughters, than you need to. I mean, why? You know, it's painful to have painful stuff in family.
Right, and those kinds of wounds are with you forever, no matter how much therapy or whatever you do, journaling,
right,
rationalizing,
right.
They're still there, and
I
you
know.
Need to find a way to manage your life despite them.
I had a wonderful aunt. Unfortunately, she died young, but I was out in Phoenix, Arizona, in Scottsdale, and visited a wonderful cousin that I haven't had a chance to spend a lot of time with. And, of course, we reminisced about all the aunts and everything. And I had a ball. It was just fabulous. But you know that my aunt said one thing to me when I was 12 that I have trouble forgetting.
Never forgot.
And it's such, I have, you know, it's such a silly thing. It's so humorous.
But it's not silly.
I was growing by leaps and bounds. My father was 6'4" at his full height. My mother was 5'7". And she had two beautiful daughters. They're still beautiful, even at our ages. And we're sitting in the kitchen, you know, we're doing all the schmoozing that women do. And suddenly my aunt says something like, well, don't grow to be more than 5'2".
Don't grow like you
right.
can turn the switch off.
Because, you know, men like
petite women.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, she was about 5 feet, and my cousins are 5 feet and 5'3". And, you know, it was like I was stabbed. You know, it was like somehow it said to me, I'm not, this person I love isn't taking into account the givens.
Well, also expecting you to have control if you wanted to only be 5'2", that you could just
right.
make that happen. I mean, that's just ridiculous. But, you know, sometimes older women, at least in our lifetimes, I don't know how it is today, but sometimes older women will give what they consider sterling advice to younger women that is actually damaging.
Right, right.
To their spirits.
Right. So, you know, I still, she was, and hopefully her soul is in peace. She was a lovely, lovely woman with full of love. But my point is that when we're trying to give a sense of strength and power to our daughters, remember who you're talking to and what that person is really all about.
Right, definitely.
And I think if we can do that, and we can also turn that same thing and do it to ourselves, rather than putting expectations that are unrealistic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's no way in the world that I am going to climb a mountain of more elevation than maybe 1,000 feet. I have no interest, no stamina when I go uphill. Even when I went uphill as a teenager, I had to walk backwards because somehow that gave me more breath.
Well, I'm at 1,700 feet, Barbara. You'll never be able to come see
me. Oh,
you.
No, I can come. I can visit.
You can drive as opposed
yeah,
to walk or bicycle.
But I'm saying sometimes, you know, I'll look and I'll say, look at this person. Like, they're 82 and they're standing on top of a mountain with
right.
that stick, you know, and they're on TV, and they just did this thing, and they conditioned themselves for a year. And, you know, there's a tendency to sort of go into a self-beat-up
mm-hmm.
rather than staying clear with what our real capacities, each person's capacities for power really are.
Well, and also saying to yourself, well, I'm not great at that, but I'm great at other things.
Exactly.
Big deal. That's what makes the world go round.
Right. You'll let me visit. We won't have to walk that uphill, right?
You'll have to hike. Well, we have to park. I'm only teasing. I was going to say we have to park about a mile away from the house because my property is so elevated, but I'm teasing. That's not
okay.
true. I do have a road, a mountain
right.
road, though.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, I was out in Sedona. I've talked
uh-huh.
to you, and that was 4,500 feet.
Wow.
And, speaking
gorgeous.
Of a place where you can get a sense of happiness.
Oh.
Wow. I mean, I really encourage women to realize that certain spaces and certain places have much more positive energy just by in and of themselves and other places.
And they're healing and inspirational and just so awe-strikingly beautiful.
Right, right. So, you know, that's another important point, because a lot of times women feel, well, I could be happy if I do all the things I need to do and sort of recreate the world,
mm-hmm.
rather than maybe you just have to get yourself to a better atmosphere sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Like I had a drive home from my mother is in Massachusetts, and she's having a lot of senility, and I know those listeners, some have even read her book, Feel Good Stories. You know, it's very sad. I feel very bad. And I had a 4.5-hour trip home. I happened to drive instead of take the train. And it's like, how do I stay focused and not get tired?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I bought a set of CDs that had comedy shows from 1951.
No.
You were not even born. No, you were, let me say.
I was born in 54.
Yeah, okay. So you were almost there. You were a star. Anyway, I listened to these shows the whole way home, and I was like flying. You know,
wow.
They were so simple and entrancing and humorous in the vintage of the early I Love Lucy's. And I couldn't have created those shows. I purchased them and brought them into my life.
Exactly. And to find what those items or things or places are that really move you is key. And to build upon them, they're transpiring. They're incredible.
Exactly.
I used, actually, Barbara, several years ago when I was still suffering a lot with post-traumatic stress disorder, I started watching classic movies through Turner Classic Movies, and
yeah.
Boy, did that restore my faith in humankind to see how civilized people could be and have fun and romance, because so much of that had been blocked from my sensibility. And it was just so wonderful.
And did you love the clothes and the grace of the older movies? And, you know, I wish we could go to a Sears Roebuck today and get those beautiful outfits.
And the hats. I love the hats and the gloves and the pumps. And well, what I love most of all, though, Barbara, is it seems people were more respectful of each other then, which I love. I think this country has gone to, it's a disgrace how people feel entitled to behave however they please.
I will say in Sedona, I'll give them credit, people were so nice
mm-hmm.
that my husband, who has just a tinge of things like road rage, you know, when he gets tired,
mm-hmm.
you know, he couldn't even be mean to anybody because everybody was so pleasant and well-mannered.
Well, it shows you the effect of the environment.
That's right. But. It mm-hmm. really does.
Right.
Yeah, so it's an amazing complexity. Well, this has been fun. Now, I'm not sure if you're going to be with me next week, Martha. You weren't sure, so I don't know if I'll continue the discussion on happiness as power or deviate a little bit, but I think we still have a lot here to work to continue it.
We sure do, and one thing, if we have just about 30 seconds, one thing, do we have 30 seconds?
Yes.
Barbara, one thing I wanted to discuss in our next show is the work of Dr. Jay Greenberg. He has redefined the drive, Freudian drive theory, which was we're all driven by motivation for sex and aggression. And he's redefined it as safety and effectance as being the primary motivators, those two feeling states. And the way he describes power is, or affectance, excuse me, is a sense of vitality and vigorousness. So I would love to talk about that.
Oh,
and for readers who are interested.
Write that down.
Sure.
Great words.
The sense of vitality and vigorousness. And for readers who are interested, that's from Oedipus and Beyond by Jay Greenberg, published in 1991 by Harvard University Press. And the chapter I'm looking at is Chapter 5, and it's quoted from page 129. It's a fascinating discussion.
And on a much, much simpler level, with less prestige, I was reading in a holistic magazine at the doctor's that they've done research on flight
fight or flight?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, and how all that research was done on men.
Mm-hmm.
But actually women, in order to become less frightened, don't go into the flight mode so much as connecting in friendship and continuity with other people.
To feel safe.
Yes.
That's interesting.
So,
it's so true.
Yeah. So, you know, we really have different mechanisms for calming ourselves down.
Auto-regulation.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So I'd like to mix that in, too, because it really coincides with this notion of staying with vitality and vigorousness is not just coming from the sexual and aggressive parts of ourselves at all.
No, well, actually, Barbara, I'm sorry if I miscommunicated. What Dr. Greenberg is saying is the two core drives are not sex and aggression. They are safety and what he terms effectance, which
right,
is
right.
The vitality.
Well,
mm-hmm.
Right. So once you can stay in these areas of safety and being effective, then you can have vitality and vigorousness.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes sense. It does make sense. I haven't read his chapter, so I'm sure I'm missing some of the subtleties, but it's putting a softer, more creative notion around our beings, in my opinion.
Right, human nature.
Yep, yep. Well, this has been great. Again, I'm Dr. Barbara Becker-Holstein, and I'm a positive psychologist, a happiness coach, and I have a new book, and it's now coming out in the girls' edition, which you can order on my site or Amazon. The Truth, I'm a Girl, I'm Smart, and I Know Everything. And the adult version, you can get two copies for the price of one on my site, enchantedself.com. And Martha?
Oh, yes, it's Martha Trowbridge. I write Inspiration for Women in Crisis, and my website is www.marthatrowbridge.org. Thanks so much for listening.
Bye.
Thank you very much for listening to Passionate Internet Voices Talk Radio. You've just listened to Dr. Barbara Becker-Holstein and Martha Trowbridge in Happiness for Women Only. And if you would like to listen to the ladies all over again, please go over to http://internetvoicesradio.com. Left-hand side of the page, you'll see the word archives. On the top, you'll see hosts. Either way, click on them. A list of names will appear. Dr. Barbara Becker-Holstein's and Martha Trowbridge among them, and you should hear the audio. If you would like a transcript of this afternoon's program, go to the left-hand side of the page and click on Daily Info. Scroll down the page until you come to Deb Harris's name. Put today's date, 1-25-08. The time, 2 to 2:30, the names, Dr. Barbara Becker-Holstein and Martha Trowbridge, and Deb Harris will take good care of you. PIVTR, whether providing you with the advice of experts or giving a voice to the average person who would not otherwise be heard. PIVTR emphasizes quality and enriching programs for our listeners' enjoyment. Our next scheduled program begins at 3:30 with Holly Campbell and What a Woman Can Do, and then this Sunday, starting at 3 o'clock, we're running a 1 hour program with Carrie Rowenberg and Peggy Roberts on Dragons Wear, which is a new ebook publishing. After that will come Authors on Track with Janet Elaine Smith, sponsored by Star Publish or Lillian Caldwell, followed by An Elephant in the Living Room with Lillian Caldwell, who will be interviewing somebody who puts together political t-shirts. And before you go, I have something to say from Naomi Wolf, who said, only one thing is more frightening than speaking your truth, and that is not speaking. Thank you all very much for listening. Have a good day. Please stop by for Holly Campbell's program beginning at 3:30 and for Sunday afternoon's programs. And remember, keep listening.